Welcome to episode 518 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Josh, how you holding up?
Doing pretty well here. Doing pretty well. How about you?
I'm doing well. You know, it's a shame that we're not doing a video this week because people can't see that you're sporting a COVID beard.
Yeah, I've been growing this for about a week, so we'll see if it lasts another week for our listeners to see it next time. Although, we did take a screenshot of us recording this tonight, so you can kind of see it in the image on the blog post, but you can't like watch it for an hour on YouTube because there won't be a YouTube video this week either.
All right, but next week there will be, in all likelihood, a YouTube video. So you should check that out. If you go to a YouTube channel, you'll be able to see our videos for many of our recent shows that we put out there. These are not edited. This is our raw recording of recording the show. So I hope you enjoy it. But, you know, if you want the refined version, subscribe to our podcast. And that's what you're doing now. So let's get into it. We start with some feedback from Jose. He sent his feedback to entertainment20 at thedigitalmediazone.com. Jose, longtime listener, longtime person with feedback, and we love that. He says, this time, just wanted to give you an update on my quarantine habits. COD Warzone has taken over my life. I'm playing nightly with a couple of friends, and Josh is right. It helped me reconnect with some friends that I would really only see every once in a while. I had no idea that this game was cross-platform. I get to play with friends who play on PC, which has been awesome. Still trying to get my skill level back to where it used to be, but last week got my first Battle Royale win, which was so satisfying. This weekend, I finally set up the Switch and had a blast playing Mario Kart and Just Dance with my wife.
Hold on. I'm going to interrupt you. It's Mario Kart. Come on, Richard.
Did I say Mario?
You said Mario.
Mario.
He's not
Mario.
A French hockey player. He's an Italian plumber.
Kanban, Kanban, whatever. She was already asking me if she could take it to work so she could play it during her breaks or as a bit of a distraction for her team. She got a lot more into it than I thought she would. On the non-gaming side, I purchased a Sony 65-inch A8G OLED TV last week. I'd been eyeing it for a while, but when it dropped $500, I finally pulled the trigger on it. I put it in the master bedroom and moved the bedroom TV to the living room. I had an old 43-inch Hisense from a Woot deal in the living room. I really wanted to put the Sony in my office because I'm a Sony fanboy, but I have an LG OLED in my office that my wife gifted me a couple of Christmases ago. The picture quality on the Sony is amazing, as expected, but what is disappointing is the interface. I thought I was going to love it since it's Android, but I find the interface cluttered and ugly compared to LG's simple lower bar interface. Any advice on how to make it a little cleaner, if that's even possible? We can pause here, but I don't think any of us has any advice because I don't own one of these. Josh, do you?
Well, I don't, but if it's just standard Android TV, then it would function really similar to the NVIDIA Shield, which I do have and use basically daily. So my quick tips, I haven't done this one specifically, but the home screen is pretty customizable. You get a bunch of horizontal bars that can scroll horizontally, and you can add and remove items from there. And I think the one that tends to add the most clutter is YouTube. Like, it'll add multiple rows of YouTube stuff. I would bet that if you remove YouTube just from the home screen, like still have the app in the main app section, I think that might clean it up a lot. And then you can also get rid of the Play Movies thing if you don't use Play Movies, stuff like that. So I think that could help you out a lot, Jose. So there is a lot of customization there.
All right. Well, I think that's good advice, but I worry that it's Sony, and Sony has a habit of over customizing stuff. So it may not be stock Android, but hopefully that helps out. It might be also good to hear from other listeners who also have these Sony OLEDs to see if they've done anything to clean this up. He goes on and he says, one last thing I wanted to mention, and this is going back to the Media Center celebration episode. A key piece of tech that I had that I can't believe I forgot to mention was the HP Media Smart TV, which had a Media Center extender built into it. I remember I overpaid for that TV specifically for that Media Center integration. It's still in use at my parents' place as a standard TV set, but I loved not needing to have any box hooked up to it to use it with Media Center. Wow. I love this throwback. I totally remember that television.
Yeah, I had completely forgotten about it when we talked about all of the great gadgets over the last 10 or so years. Those were really cool. To just have everything built into it was pretty magical.
It was a really cool device. If I remember correctly, you could switch between the HP experience or the Media Center experience to manage your overall television interface. And the more that I thought about this, the more that I thought, wow, you know, HP just kept on taking it on one cheek after the other. Because damn, if they didn't come out with the latest and coolest, unique, new Microsoft branded home living room product every single time. And every single time Microsoft pulled the rug out from under them.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. But they made some pretty cool stuff in the meantime.
They did.
I do just want to real quick jump back to where you started with playing some Call of Duty Warzone. I'm still playing it. I love it. And I'm really glad to hear stories like Jose's where it's bringing him back together with friends. I do think that's been one of the great things about this crappy COVID-19 situation that we're in. If you're a gamer, this is a great time to be reconnecting with friends that you haven't talked to in a while. This weekend, I even played some NHL 20 with guys that I haven't played any video games with in like probably a year and a half. And it was a blast. It was so fun. Really great reconnecting with those people. And that didn't really have anything to do with COVID-19 per se. It just happened to work out. But that sort of thing is happening all over the place. And I love hearing about it from our listeners, from members of our community.
That is completely cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, again, thank you, Jose, for sending in your feedback to entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And again, I'll say if anybody has any thoughts on how he might be able to clean up his Sony Smart TV experience, we'd love to hear from you there too. All right, let's get into it, Josh. We have a big feature this week. The new device that we were waiting for when we were at CES. TiVo gave us a preview of the TiVo Stream 4K, and that device is now available. This was expected in the first quarter. Considering everything that's going on in the world, we're pretty close to the first quarter. And it is essentially an Android TV device, a dongle, if you will, with that long hanging dongle that's really a box hanging onto a dongle that's going to hang off the back of your television. And it includes all of the specs that you would expect. It's 4K, Dolby Vision HDR, Dolby Atmos. And you may remember when this first launches, which is now, it's only $50. So for $50, you get an Android TV device with that classic TiVo remote. That's one of the things that I think makes this so cool. And it's a TiVo voice remote that uses the Google Assistant because this is an Android TV. So you have voice search and you have that all through the Android experience. And so this, I'm really excited about this. I think this is a cool offering. It's going to be $70 later down the road, $69.99 technically, for $50. And by the way, did I mention no TiVo service fee? then you have this box that you can use for a holistic, consolidated, aggregated TiVo experience across your streaming and linear TV. So in case you don't remember this, they are partnering with Sling TV. Sling TV is their launch partner for linear television. So if you want your normal cable channels and all that, you can get that through Sling, and you're going to get that through a normal TiVo guide. You're going to get that linear TV guide that includes all the Sling channels you subscribe to and all the TiVo Plus channels if you care about them. And it's going to be available for you even with DVR service through Sling if you want that. This is not a DVR, but Sling offers DVR service, so you could get that. Then they offer Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, Vudu, HBO Go, CBS All Access as part of their integrated TiVo experience. So all of that is available through search. All of that is available through recommendations. What you watch on one service is going to influence what's recommended on another. It's a holistic streaming and linear TV experience that, frankly, I don't think anyone is offering yet. And I think this is a really, really cool offering. Sure, you have to pay for all these services. You have to subscribe to them if you want them on there, except for Vudu. Vudu, of course, is based partly on your content and then other stuff that you might watch for free or purchase. And you have to subscribe to Sling. But overall, it's probably going to cost you less than what you're paying for everything individually if you're including this as, or if you're thinking of this as a cable and streaming solution all in one.
Yeah, and that's what TiVo is really pursuing here, is the one streaming device, the one device, period, that could do everything yet. But the thing that I feel like we have to hammer this point home, specifically because it's TiVo. There is no cable TV integration. There is no over-the-air TV integration. This is just streaming, and that's why they're partnering with Sling TV. So you can still use it sort of like a traditional TiVo. You know, I've got my TiVo that I'm pulling in over the air, and I've got the guide, and it'll have a similar guide. Like you said, it's just Sling TV instead. The regular TiVo has most of these apps that you're talking about. This will too. But this is way less expensive than a regular TiVo. Plus, right, like you mentioned at the top of this, you do not have that monthly or lifetime subscription fee.
Yeah, and that, I think, is the big turnoff for many people for TiVo. You know, TiVo is well known in the industry. I would argue that pretty much most people who have cable know what TiVo is. They're just like, yeah, but I'm just going to get my box from my cable service, and that's fine. I think what this does is this shifts TiVo from a hardware DVR manufacturing company, which they've already kind of been pulling away from, because technically Aris actually produces their boxes now. They just brand them. And it makes them a content aggregator. It makes them basically a services company that does what they do best, which was to deliver the experience to the customer across the content available to them. So I'm bullish on this. I think this is a really cool concept. It's interesting, and you probably noticed this, Josh, probably not suspect timing so much as strategic timing, but Dave Zatz, the night before this launched, announced his basically divorce from TiVo. He's done with TiVo. So this clearly isn't going to appeal to everyone. And I understand that people are tired of TiVo's charges. People are tired of TiVo's looking at ways of squeezing advertising in where it doesn't even originally belong. Like when you go to watch your own recorded programming, that's frustrating. But TiVo has been the gold standard in terms of the DVR experience, and particularly now that Media Center is more or less gone. It's gone officially, although people still use it. It's really the last one standing. And I want to give them the benefit of the doubt because I think they've earned that.
I think so too. So you know, we've still got more questions, but We hope to get our hands on this thing soon, and we'll find out if it really is, you know, the one streaming box to rule them all. All right, so let's move on to the rest of our news. We frequently have new stories from Plex, and this week it's no different. We've got another new story from Plex. At first, on the surface, this might have been a story that I mean, we would have reported on it because it's Plex, but this falls into that category of stories that I'm getting kind of tired of reporting on, but there's some cool stuff here. So what Plex has done is they've been adding to their list of online streaming content that you get for free that'll just show up inside of your Plex server. That's all just streaming movies and TV from other sources. This has been around for a few months. It seems like they basically spent the last few months pretty much only promoting that until last month when they had the free DVR stuff and all of that. But this week's announcement is a little bit bigger of a deal. They're now integrating Crackle for free. And Crackle is really one of the, if not the biggest player in this space right now. I think it's probably the biggest one. It's the one that you're most likely to have heard of, right?
Yeah, it is. And it still surprises me because even until just like 3 months ago, I was making jokes about how, nope, I'd already seen the 6 movies on Crackle.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've heard of it. I definitely know it. I definitely think it's the most popular. I don't have a Crackle app installed on any of my devices because I'm just not into this sort of content, but maybe I am because there is some good stuff that they mention on here. Patriot Games. I love Patriot Games. That's a great book. It's a great movie. I might rewatch it through Plex, through Crackle. Captain Phillips, The Illusionist. They're also going to be making some TV shows available like Hell's Kitchen and Roseanne. Pretty sure this is the original Roseanne, not the new Roseanne. So that's cool. Like they've got the right source for all of this stuff now. Like Crackle is kind of the go-to for this type of content. So I think that's good.
So how is this content available? Is this ad supported?
Yes.
And how well executed is this? Please tell me this is better than what Vudu is doing.
I don't know because I still haven't actually tried it for myself yet.
Okay. All right. I mean, as long as they're not showing you the same ad over and over and over again at every break, or worse yet, they don't have any ads. So they either, like ABC, like the ABC app does, show you blank space telling you with text that this is where the ad would appear if there were one, or what Vudu does, which is advertise their own service that you're already watching during. During the ad break, I mean, as long as they handle it intelligently, I'm okay with it.
Yeah. They do have one other thing that they're doing that I think is kind of cool. They're making a new blog called The Watch List. Because when I think of these services, my biggest problem is I feel like it's going to be full of crap. And I don't want to have to try and go in there and spend a half an hour trying to find something to watch. So right. They've got this new watch list blog that has articles on it with things like 6 heist movies to steal your heart, 5 quality dramas that will move you, 5 actual laugh out loud comedies. Okay, now I've got a curated list of things to go and look at that I might actually care about.
And I might normally roll my eyes to stuff like that, but that is, in all fairness, like typical Plex blog fodder.
It is. Now, next level, to really bring it all home, what I would like to see them do is implement that inside of Plex.
Yeah.
That would make it perfect.
Yeah, I would love to see recommendations in Plex rather than just, here are the like lowest 15 channels you receive with content that you might be interested in, even though you've never, ever, ever watched any of it.
Right. Exactly. All right, Richard, this next story is an interesting one, and I'm curious where you're going to come down on this. So we mentioned a few weeks ago that Universal, along with some other movie studios, but Universal in particular, had planned to release Trolls World Tour, the next huge Trolls movie, as a direct-to-home release because it was due to hit theaters right after all of the stay-at-home orders were issued. So no one could go to the movie theaters to see this movie. So they released it as a $20 digital rental, and it did amazingly well. They netted over $77 million.
Yeah, that's just crazy. I never saw that happening. We joked about this. Mm-hmm. I mentioned how these were titles that nobody was going to be caring about.
Trolls World Tour is absolutely a movie that people would care about. And
you called it.
My kids asked if we could rent it, and I said, no way. We're not paying $20 for a rental that you can watch over a 48-hour period.
It's not happening. No way. We're not paying $20 for a movie that we could have spent $40 to go see in the theater.
Plus the cost of candy and all that stuff. Right. So this worked out really well for NBC Universal. Now, one of the reasons they netted $77 million is because they didn't have to share as much of the profits with movie theaters.
Right.
Like AMC.
Right.
So Universal then came out and said, well, when theaters do eventually reopen, we're going to release movies in both formats where it makes sense. And immediately the CEO of AMC lost his friggin' mind and was like, well, then screw it. Like AMC, which by the way, is the largest movie theater chain in the world,
which is the only reason they're pulling this crap.
Yes. Said they will not show any more NBC Universal movies in their theaters, period. Now, if you're not sure, like, does this really matter? Does NBC Universal release any big movies? Fast and the Furious movies are NBC Universal. Furious 9 was supposed to come out this year. It's not going to, like pretty much every other movie. That movie was going to make insane amounts of money for everybody, including AMC. And they're just saying, nope.
Think Universal Studios. We're talking about some of the biggest brands in the industry.
Yeah.
We're talking about Jurassic Park. We're talking about the Harry Potter movies.
Right. There's a lot.
No, actually, that's Warner Brothers, but they have an agreement with Universal.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
But, I mean, we're talking about big, huge brands here. And, I don't see NBC backing down from this. I don't at all. By the way, it's now Comcast NBC Universal, if we can throw any more names in there. They are the behemoth, and they're fighting against AMC. All right, you go do that. You go complain that you're not going to show their movies anymore. You go do that. I'm sure that's going to work out just fine for you. I don't have one tear to shed for the movie theaters who have been basically taking a protectionist stance against the way the movie industry has been moving. Not one. I get that people want to go to the movies. I want to go to the movies occasionally. I want the movie experience to be good. AMC is not the company that is delivering really good movie experiences right now. So I don't care. I really don't care. Good for AMC. Let them see how this works out for them.
So do you think they'll stick to it?
AMC?
Yes.
Like, who's going to flinch first? I don't think Universal is going to flinch on this. I think AMC is going to have to flinch on this. And will they? That's hard to tell. I mean, they are the number one. So they have the arrogance that goes with that. In some markets, there's really nowhere else to go. So I don't know. I would think that they will start feeling the hurt at some point before Comcast does.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I'm just, I don't know, man. To just not have those movies at all? Not sure. Like, I want to see Fast and Furious 9 in a theater.
I could be misremembering this, but I don't think I am. Remember what used to exist before in the movie theater world? Paramount theaters. I'm just saying.
I don't even know if my local theaters are AMC. Most of them are Cinemark. Is that different?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Because I don't pay enough attention to theaters
right,
anymore.
Right. But it seems like it might be. I don't know. We'll see. In a long, long time when theaters finally reopen.
This is not going to play out well for them. I really don't think it will. Because honestly, I feel like, and I'm not joking about the Paramount Theater thing, right? Universal has a play here. Fine. We'll buy or open our own theaters.
Right.
We don't need you.
Yeah. They'll buy all of the bankrupt theaters.
Right. Right. And don't think that they haven't considered that.
I'm sure that that is a major plan on their drawing board right now.
Right.
That's one question that we've been talking about a little bit just in my house. Like, do movie theaters come back from this? I don't know.
It's hard. Your average movie theater is going to have a really hard time coming back from it. The movie theaters that I have in my area are unlike anything that I've seen before. I think I've mentioned this. Like, every seat is a recliner that is at least wider than your average first class flight seat would be. And you have like a full area for, not that they're designed for it, but a walker or a wheelchair to roll down the aisle in front of you on every single aisle.
Wow.
So my movie theater experience that I have in my town is way different than what most have, because most people still have the crammed together seat experience. Even if it is stadium or whatever, you're still really pretty tight.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds pretty great. Okay. Another thing that sounds pretty great, but I still don't have, supposedly, according to 9to5 Google, Android TV devices can now finally be added to Google Home speaker groups.
Oh, I wonder if that'll work on the TiVo stream.
I've been wondering the same thing. I've been wanting to use my NVIDIA Shield TV as part of my downstairs speakers group from the moment I got other Google Home speakers in my house, because as I've mentioned, my NVIDIA Shield is hooked up to the best speakers in my house. Why wouldn't I want that as part of a speaker group?
Right.
So apparently this is coming soon. It doesn't seem like it's available to everybody yet. The link that we'll post to in the show notes does have some directions on how you can sign up for essentially the Chromecast beta experience and get the beta version of the app installed on your Android TV box, and then it'll show up. But I've been making sure that the app is updated on my NVIDIA Shield, and it still doesn't show up as a device to add to groups for me yet. But I have not tried the beta thing. So who knows? Maybe by the time you're hearing this, it's been pushed to everybody publicly and you won't even need to be in the beta. So definitely, if you've got an Android TV device and it's hooked up to your best speakers, look this weekend. This is your weekend project. See if you can add your Android TV to your Google Home speaker groups.
Cool.
All right. And now it's gaming news. And this is kind of a weird subset of gaming news, because like Richard is looking at this list and going, oh my gosh, this is going to take forever. There's so many bullet points here.
I'm totally taking a bathroom break now.
It's not actually going to take that long, because there's not actually a whole lot here to announce. So first, I want to hit off on kind of a theme. We mentioned a couple of episodes ago that E3 is, of course, canceled. I think we mentioned either last episode or the one before. Or maybe we didn't. I don't know. The Gamescom has also been canceled. Yeah, we did mention that. That's the biggest game conference in the world. It's basically like E3, but in Europe, in Cologne, Germany, and they let the the public in. So it's enormous. That's been canceled. That event is in August. So two biggest events of the year, Tokyo Game Show. I don't think it's been canceled yet, but it's going to get canceled. I'm sure of that. None of these are happening. So now all of the companies are rushing to figure out what are they going to do? Because this year is pretty big. We've got new generations of consoles coming from Microsoft and Sony. So EA Electronic Arts announced they're going to be having an event called EA Play Live. It's about what you would expect. It's going to be a live stream event that's probably going to be fairly similar to what their press conference would have been anyway. That's going to be June 11th at 7 p.m. Eastern. So do the math on whatever time zone you happen to be in. One thing that I like to point out with EA is, you know, I think a lot of people, when they think of EA, they think of Madden and FIFA and maybe NHL, maybe NBA. EA is a lot more than just sports games. So expect some cool things here. Maybe we'll even get the long requested, long desired Mass Effect trilogy remaster. That would be really, really cool. Similar to that, Jeff Keighley, the guy who hosts the Video Game Awards, he's also been a very big part of planning events for E3, has announced a thing that he's calling Summer Game Fest. I'm kind of thinking this is basically just a shared Google calendar of all of these things, like EA's EA Play Live that we just talked about. It's a 4-month calendar of events going from May until the end of August. So there's not much on his site yet, although there should be by the time you're hearing this, with schedules, because he's working with basically everybody. Sony and Microsoft are going to be part of it, and then tons of game publishers and studios. And then the other cool thing going along with this is Steam and Xbox, as part of some of these events, will have playable demos. So if you were, you know, one of the people who's going to E3 or Gamescom to play games, well, now you can stay home and play them on your computer or your Xbox. So that'll be really cool. Speaking of Xbox, Microsoft is starting to roll out some more information for the Xbox Series X. This week, Thursday, May 7th, 11 a.m. Eastern, they're going to be doing their first demonstration of some games. So it's only going to be third-party games, including Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which was just announced last week. There will be no announcements of first-party games, but it will be Xbox Series X gameplay demoed on Thursday. So you are not going to want to miss that. You're going to get to see, you know, actual next-gen gaming on display this Thursday. So don't miss that. Microsoft also laid out some of their plans for how we can expect to get more information from them as this year goes on, plus a little bit of reassurance. So they're calling this whole initiative Xbox 2020, and not like the year, like the eye test 20/20.
That's not going to be confusing to anyone. Like most Microsoft branding.
Right. But basically all they're saying is, we're going to have more events to show you things. It's basically starting with the event I just mentioned. And they're saying, yeah, we know that's just third-party games. We know you want to see what's coming from our first-party studios. That's coming in July. We will be having an event in July focused on first-party games. We will be showing brand new unannounced games during that event. They're also saying, don't worry right now. If you're worried that this COVID-19 thing is going to prevent you from getting an Xbox Series X this year, or prevent you from being able to play Halo Infinite, both of those are still on track to ship holiday 2020. They're still saying holiday. They're not giving us any more narrowed down window there. It's just holiday. I'm still betting November. It's got to be. It has to be November.
Yeah, I think we pretty much knew that. How do you figure that this is true, though? That's the problem that I have. That they're on track, meaning that manufacturing and R&D and everything else has been on track during all of this. How every country that would have been involved in this supply chain at some point in time has been impacted where workers couldn't go to factories. So how?
Well, I've been hearing from Microsoft and just from lots of other sources that supply chain stuff in Southeast Asia has been coming back over the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
And we're still a few months out.
I understand that, but you still had to be working with those same sources to be finalizing your hardware and specs and reviewing. I mean, this stuff gets like set in stone months in advance of the actual like assembly lines running, if you will.
But I bet most of the internals have been set for months because they've been shipping dev kits to game studios for months.
That's true. Okay. Yep. That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah. So the final packaging and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, that I'm sure is probably still being worked on. But I think most of the work is probably mostly through all of that design and production chain. That's my guess.
I think if it came down to packaging, people would be happy if they got it in a brown box. Let's be serious.
When I say packaging, I don't mean the box that it's coming in. I mean like the final design of the case and stuff like that.
Yeah, but you joke about that. That kind of stuff takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. Many companies don't even imagine how many staff hours go into designing the box and shipping the shipping carton for a new product that you're selling. Mm-hmm. And it literally takes millions of dollars to do that right. It's ridiculous.
Right. And then the last sort of newsy story around gaming is that Microsoft had their quarterly financials last week, their big announcement around that stuff. And gaming did well for them in the first quarter.
Surprise, it's going to do well for them in the second quarter, too.
Yeah, because one area where the COVID-19 stuff hasn't been a drag has been gaming. You know, when you have to stay home, what else are you going to do? Play some video games. So that's worked out really well for Microsoft. They announced for the first time ever how many Xbox Game Pass subscribers they have. Now, they didn't break it down, but it's 10 million Game Pass subscribers. Now, when I say they didn't break it down, there's three different versions of Game Pass. There's Game Pass for console, Game Pass for PC, and Game Pass Ultimate. So all of those combined make up 10 million Game Pass subscribers. And that's a pretty great number. That's a really great number. They also said they have 90 million monthly Xbox Live users. Now, Xbox Live users is surely including non-Xbox Live Gold users. So I imagine that when I made an Xbox Live account for my kids, if they sign into my Xbox, they count. And yeah, they sort of have Xbox Live Gold because I have Xbox Live Gold and they're playing on my console. But I think all of those would count. Regardless, that means there's 90 million people playing on Xboxes every month. And at this point, I'd have to assume that the vast majority of them are on Xbox One family consoles. So, you know, we've heard basically nothing but disparaging remarks about the size of the Xbox player base since, well, really 2013 when the Xbox One launched, that it was always fewer than the PlayStation 4. And that's for sure true. Otherwise, Microsoft would actually tell us how many units they've shipped, and they stopped doing that basically immediately. But if there are 90 million people playing on Xbox Live, that's a lot of units shipped. You know, like I'm still hearing people that are like, oh, I'm pretty sure there've only been like 40 million Xbox One shipped. No, there's no way it's only 40 million. Not if we've got 90 million people playing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Xbox Game Pass, like we talk about it frequently. It is the best deal in gaming, period. It is one of, if not the best thing going for Xbox right now. And one of the things that could actually get people to switch over to Xbox when the next generation launches. We'll see.
So what's your, I don't think we've talked about this yet, but what's your prediction? Do you think that Xbox is going to take this back? I mean, Sony has been hedging so much, it's ridiculous. We recently learned that their pricing is probably going to be, you know, premium. They're probably going to pull what Xbox tried to pull off a couple years ago with premium pricing. They're actually reducing their order for hardware because they don't think that they're going to sell as much as they originally did. You think Xbox might finally pull this out again?
Well, you have to be fairly nuanced when you talk about those things, because even if you go back to the previous generation, where us Americans frequently talk about how, for the most part, Microsoft won. Well, they only won here in North America.
How do you figure that? We've been talking about how Sony has been in the lead for the last 3 years.
Sorry.
More than that.
When I said previous generation, I meant the PlayStation 3 versus 360.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that generation.
Been 6 years, hasn't it? Good grief.
Yeah. Oh, it's been a long time.
I'm so old.
That generation, the Xbox 360 launched a year before the PlayStation 3. It launched much, you know, $200 cheaper for the console. It had a huge head start and did really, really well in America. I don't see, like, even with the advances that Xbox is making, they're not going to beat Sony in Japan. It just won't happen in Japan.
Of course not. No.
But even in Europe, they've never really beat Sony. So the real question comes down to, will they win in the United States? I'm still not sure I want to say yes to that. Like, I mean, I do want to say yes to that, but and I feel like they should. Like, they're going to have the more powerful console. Things like Xbox Game Pass and full backwards compatibility, including a lot of hardware backwards compatibility, all of that is really great for the consumer. So as a consumer, you should be strongly considering an Xbox Series X over a PlayStation 5. But a lot of people still just won't. They get into these camps and they want to stay there.
It's a Canon Nikon thing.
It is. All right. Well, to round out our news this week, of course, the day after we recorded last week is the day that Sony announced their free PlayStation Plus games for the month of May. This month, it is Cities Skylines, which is a city building simulator, and Farming Simulator 19. So neither of these games interest me, but it's a couple of really chill games, and maybe chill games is what we need right now.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
Not a bad idea. I think that's okay. I think they get a pass on releasing a couple of games that maybe aren't the greatest.
I think that's fair. All right, well, that's going to wrap our news. So now we're going to jump into what's going on in our respective entertainment centers. And Josh, I have one really big thing going on that I'm very excited about. I have finally pulled the trigger on a Synology box.
Ooh.
To replace my Windows Home server that still runs today.
Amazing.
It hosts all kinds of downloaded and transcoded content. It hosts, I think, pretty much anything that I record off of PlayOn. It hosts tons of downloaded TiVo stuff and Media Center stuff that I've archived. So I'm very excited to get a new home for that. One that also, by the way, is capable of transcoding two simultaneous 4K streams.
Whoa.
So that's pretty cool. And it also has the ability to run different applications in isolated containers. So I'm probably going to try to move my Plex server to this new box to see if it'll work okay there. So I'm very excited about this. This arrives, well, in podcast time, it already arrived. And so I'm sure that today I'm doing nothing but playing with this new server.
Cool.
Yep.
So how Indeed. Many drive bays does it have? And people are going to want to know what model.
Yeah, I got the Synology DS10 19 Plus. So it is a 5 drive box that has 8 gig of onboard memory and two slots for mSATA drives. I mean, it's pretty capable. I'm very excited about it.
Nice.
Yep. So I will shortly be talking about that again in the future, because I expect that to be a core part of my entertainment serving experience. Now, all that said, Plex is where I consume most of my content, and I just have to go on we'll call this a micro rant. Well, maybe a mini rant. You're always hearing me complain about how I hate the authentication process when I get logged out from something. And that happens with Plex. Sure, it happens with everything. Plex actually handles that better than most, because you can take a screenshot of a big, huge QR code that's on your TV, and it'll take you to the verification page. You still have to enter that code for some stupid reason. They didn't pass it as a parameter on that URL, but it makes that process a little bit easier than, say, logging into Vudu every single month when you don't expect to. But when Plex rolled out the new experience to all their different clients over the last couple of months, that new experience requires that you go through a mandatory onboarding and setup process where you define what libraries are you going to pin? What libraries do you want to include at all? What are your preferences for X, Y, and Z? You have to go through this process before you can get to anything. And I just experienced this for the fourth time on a mobile device the other day. And I basically just said, I don't need it. I am not bothering with setup on this device because I am not going through this one more time. Why can't it copy it from my other devices?
Because you might want access to different things on those different devices.
Oh, come on. Then start there and let me tweak it.
I agree. That would be nice. That would be the ideal way of doing it.
Insane. Absolutely insane. So, Plex and I, we're not on good terms right now. But, hopefully it'll get better. I have been watching some TV. I am all caught up on The Flash. The Westworld season finale for season 3 was just this week. I really enjoyed it. It had some twists I did not expect. It has some stuff that makes you scratch your head, like many Westworld episodes, and say, what just happened? And then you go searching YouTube and you get lost for hours. And then I also watched The Conners. I watched a couple more episodes of Better Call Saul. I'm almost caught up on the season that I just started last week. It's so good. It is so good. This may be the best season of Better Call Saul. I'm really impressed. Watched a couple more episodes of Frankie and Grace. Josh, I buy physical media for content that I don't have, right? Like, I want to have the disc,
right?
The 4K, whatever, so I can have the best possible experience.
Especially when it's 4K.
Absolutely. And one of my favorite movies as a reference for physical media from format to format to format, starting back at DVD, has been Gladiator.
Great movie.
It is an amazing movie. It has an unbelievable sound field that they have faithfully reproduced in the technology available at the time, each step along the way. Well, our friends over at Dublu.com had a review recently posted about the 4K version of Gladiator. And I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. I totally have to get that. I can't imagine that in Dolby Atmos. That'll be amazing. I bought it and I got it and I was so excited. I opened it up and I redeemed the code in it and it didn't show up at the top of my list. And I'm like, I don't understand. Why isn't it at the top of my list? It's the latest thing I redeemed. It's because I already owned it. I had already redeemed it.
Oh, Richard.
It has been out for like a year. And I was so excited about it that I didn't bother to check. Hey, do I own this yet?
You have ways of checking these things.
You do. I could use Plex, but me and Plex were not on good talking.
What about Voodoo? Oh, crap.
Oh, geez, I couldn't believe it. Okay, anyway, other than that, I've been watching a lot of news, and I am way, way, way behind on my podcast. 2.5 weeks now. I continue to lose ground every single day, despite the dog walks. They just don't make up for the other time that somehow I would have, even though my life has not changed that much. I just don't get it. Josh, what about you? What are you doing? I see a lot of games here.
You do see a lot of games here. So you're probably looking at this list and going, did you do anything but play video games in the last week? Because this is a lot of games. In my defense, while this is a long list of games, most of them I didn't spend a lot of time playing. So NHL 20, of course, spend some time playing NHL 20 with friends, but a little bit of time playing Ori and the Will of the Wisp. Still not nearly as much as I probably should have, because I wanted to check out some other things. So one night I kind of got sucked down the rabbit hole of the Microsoft rewards mixed with Xbox Game Pass sort of stuff, where you get the Microsoft reward points for completing various quests and stuff. And I'm like, I got Game Pass, why not check this out? So like one of them was like a weekly quest of install 5 Xbox Game Pass games remotely. So use your phone to install these games. Okay, that's no problem. I don't have to play them. I just got to install them. Cool. Click, 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 click. Done. But some of them did require, play 3 Game Pass games. And I'm like, all right, so let's see what we got. Because there are some that I've been wanting to check out. So the first one that I checked out was F1 2018. So Formula One 2018. So it's a couple years old, but it's a racing game. So like, sure, I'll check this out. I used to watch a lot of Formula One. It's fun. I really liked it. I ended up spending more time than I expected I would. I probably played for, 2 hours that night, I bet, just playing that game. I stayed up too late playing F1 2018 that night. and might go back to it because it is a lot of fun. Also, the friend group that I've referenced frequently when I talk about like playing The Division and stuff, now that we're kind of done with The Division, we're looking for other games that we can play together. So Castle Crashers was one of the recent Xbox Live Games with Gold games. In fact, I think it was just available last month. So we tried that out. Castle Crashers is kind of an old school style beat 'em up with some RPG elements. It's fun. Didn't love it. Had a couple of bugs that kind of got us going, we got some other games. Let's check those out too. So the same night that we played Castle Crashers, we also tried out Totally Reliable Delivery Service, which is a new game. It's on Xbox Game Pass. It is a like ragdoll physics game where it's just you're a delivery person. So there's like a place where you go and you pick up a package and it says you need to deliver this package over here. And the controls are like R2 will grab something, or RT will grab something with your right hand, and LT will grab something with your left hand. And if you press the shoulder buttons, the RB and LB, it'll like lift your hands over your head. And it's super ragdoll. So everything is super weird and it's kind of clumsy. And it sounds like it could be a lot of fun. It wasn't. I didn't enjoy my time with that game at all. So like a lot of people were like, think Manuel Samuel plus like Overcooked. Like, cool, I loved Overcooked, let's give it a try. Or maybe Octodad is another good example. No, I really dislike the game. The online multiplayer is super laggy. I don't recommend this game at all. Stay away from Totally Reliable Delivery Service. On the other hand, V Rally 4 is one of this month's games with gold, so we checked that out on one of the nights that we played. And I think we played for like an hour and a half. That game was fun. There's a whole bunch of different racing modes. There's regular rally, which wouldn't be as fun because regular rally is basically time trials. So doing that with your friends, maybe not the most fun interactive experience, but they've got rally cross, which is, I think they think their version is 6 or 8 cars on track at the same time in dirt and stuff. It's chaos and fun. So that mode is fun. There's also buggies doing off-road racing. That was fun. So V-Rally 4, you should check that out. It's available for free. So definitely check that out. And then today, Forza Street came out. It's the Forza, I was going to say Forza Motorsport, but it's a Forza game on mobile. And it's free. It's a free-to-play Forza game on iOS and Android. It's interesting. It's a street racing game that's probably a lot like a lot of other street racing sort of mobile games. If you're thinking, oh, Forza's got really great like steering controls and just, you know, the Forza Motorsport games really go for that realism. That is not this game at all. You don't even have steering controls. It follows the track the way that it goes. And you only control two things. One is the gas pedal and one is the boost button. And the gas pedal, basically, as you approach a turn, you let off the gas as you come into the turn, and you get back on the gas as you exit the turn. And if you nail those times perfectly, it builds up your boost meter faster. And then, of course, there's, you know, multiple currencies built into this game as all of these mobile games work, and you can buy and win more cars and upgrades and all this stuff. I kind of like it. We'll see if I actually stick with it.
Sounds like driving a go-kart.
Kind of. But it's cool and real cars. So yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I might not. That's all the gaming stuff. Most importantly, I finished Homeland.
Yay!
Wow. I'm impressed that they were able to end that series in such a satisfying way.
Give me one word as a superlative that you would use to describe the finale.
Oof. I'm always bad at coming up with one word to describe anything. I can't. Like,
okay.
I really can't. Like, it was really gripping, really tense, has some closure, like, and all of those things.
Satisfying is a fair word. I think it was, you're not going to like my word. My word for the finale is that it was good when the season was outstanding. I think the season was the best that they've done since very early in the show. And I felt like the finale for it was good in comparison to everything else that they pulled off in the season.
I think that's a fair statement, but it's really hard to do a season finale, and it's way harder to do a series finale.
Yep. No, totally get it. Totally get it. I mean, I wasn't unsatisfied. I was a little bit like, oh, okay, all right. But it wasn't like, holy crap, that was amazing. You know, it was no Newhart finale, for lack of a better comparison. And frankly, I think Newhart still wins the finale wars ever of anything.
I don't think I've even heard of Newhart.
Oh, I am so hurt right now.
What is Newhart?
Bob Newhart's second TV series, where he ran this little inn in New England, and he had all these quirky people around him, and the finale harkened back to his first series that he created. It was brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Okay.
Okay, so to compare to a show that we have both finished recently, better than Good Place?
That's hard too, because you and I both thought that was like, okay, well, like we didn't quite know where they were going to take this. The last season wasn't all that good in the case of Good Place. And so that season finale, all things considered, seemed pretty satisfying. This was, I think, harder to feel satisfying to me because this last season was so, so good.
It was. I completely agree with you that this was the best season of Homeland in a really long time. So I have not asked you this question ahead of time, maybe to the point where I might need to edit this out, depending on how you answer. But I had a thought as I was looking at this. I wonder if our listeners would be interested in us discussing Homeland, the wrap up of all of it in a non spoiler free, like, special episode,
like a bonus episode.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would totally be interested in doing that. So they should let us know if that's something they'd like. And we could put that up on the YouTube channel or something like that.
Yeah, that would be fun. So there's a lot of ways they could let us know. They could tweet us at Richard Gunther, at Josh Pollard, at Digimedia Zone. Any or all of them would work. We're on Facebook. We've got an email address, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
Whoa, did you just like sneak in a closing transition?
I sure did.
I didn't you even like notice
that?
It.
You like that? Until you ruined it. Gosh. All of our contact information is available in the show notes. You can find all of that there. You can also typically find our other podcast that we had this show called Home On, but I'm not sure if Richard is still doing the show.
Ouch. Ouch. Oh, wow. That hurts. Yeah. So that is fair. The most recent episode is with, Blake from Smart Things. So That was a while ago. This whole thing has thrown me, and it's been hard for me to stay on my regular schedule, which I'm already hard pressed to keep up with, as many listeners know. So two things. One, no, three things. One, Home On has not gone away. There is a new episode still in the works. I actually was working on it just yesterday. So it is happening. It's just really slow to get there. Meanwhile, I am going to celebrate the fact that Home On was recently listed in USA Today's Home magazine, which comes out like, I don't know, two or three times a year. And you can buy it on your grocery store. Oh, wait, nobody's picking up magazines to page through them at their grocery store. All right, well, never mind that. But we're still really excited that Home On was listed as a DIY podcast in USA Today's Home magazine.
Did you buy a copy?
I bought a copy online. You can't actually buy a digital copy of this. It's so ironic. But yes, you can't buy a digital copy of this magazine yet. I think it will be available eventually, but I think they're windowing it and they still sell hard copies first. So I bought online a hard copy. So thank you. We're really honored to be there. In the meantime, a new episode of the Smart Home Show is coming out, and Adam and I are talking about my favorite topic, smart lighting.
Ooh.
And you know we're going to dive deep there.
So this is going to be like a special 6-hour episode?
It ends up being something like an hour 20. But we dive deep specifically into bulbs and or versus, depending on how you look at it, switches. So I think it's a good episode that people are going to enjoy if they're interested in lighting and looking for a good solution. And I am coming back with Home On, trust me.
I know you are. All right. Well, we didn't do the show live this week, but most weeks we do record the show live online. There's a video and audio, and there's a chat room that you can fully participate in as we record the show. That's usually Tuesday nights around 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We always try to tweet about it to give you a little bit of notice ahead of time so that you can tell the rest of your family, sorry, I've got important plans tonight. Entertainment 2.0 is recording.
Dinner? No, I'm going to listen to these two geeks talk about tech stuff.
Exactly. Duh. Like, that's what, like, thousands of people show up for this, and you could be one of them.
I think you're delusional. I don't know. I don't see that. That's several orders of magnitude different than what I normally notice.
Okay, it's not quite thousands. Not quite there yet. But you could be one of the many that are having fun with us on Tuesday nights. So come and check that out, because that is going to do it for episode 518. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
I feel like I should say adios because it's Cinco de Mayo. Adios!
It is Cinco de Mayo. We didn't even mention it, but now we did.